I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. It was a long, cold, icy, windy winter in Philadelphia and the Northeast United States, and I often wondered during those months how homeless people in the city managed to survive the elements. I saw them huddling in doorways and under overhangs trying to keep warm and dry. While the weather is a challenge, so are other elements: the changes in the economy, the shortage of services, and the growing need for help. Today, we'll get an update on what organizations are doing in Philadelphia to address this serious problem. We'll also call out to Berks County to find out what homelessness means in that area north of Philadelphia, including Reading, Pennsylvania. And joining us here in our Philadelphia studios is Marcella McGuire. She's Director of Homeless Services for Philadelphia's Department of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disability. And Marcella McGuire, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. Great to see you.
Nice to see you as well. And also with us is Chris Cimariglia, and she's Executive Director of Pathways to Housing PA. It's a model that has been working here in Philadelphia for about 5 years. And Chris, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks, Marty.
Marcella, I began by talking about the winter, something we all complained about over the last 3, 4, 5 months. But I often did think about homeless people and how they were surviving all this terrible weather.
Of course.
How did they do?
Well, I'm actually really, really proud to say that thanks to the amazing work of Project Home and a number of other agencies that do our street outreach services, we actually, as far as we know at this point, didn't lose anybody to hypothermia. That's like someone who died because they were out there and on the cold. Philadelphia, for over a decade, has had 24/7, 365 street outreach services. Basically, and folks all over the city did this, called Project Home's hotline, 215-232-1984, and we got teams out there. And there are about 40 direct line staff who work for Hall Mercer and Mental Health Association, Horizon House and Self Incorporated, led by Project Home. They were out there in the cold and these folks didn't get a Christmas, they didn't get a New Year's, because it was just so extreme. We actually just had a celebration luncheon for them on Monday, because we are all very happy that winter is over. Philly Vets Multi-Service Center hosted that for us, and Impact Services were really great to see them. But folks are tired. I mean, the question I see when I talk to the outreach staff now is, okay, when's the vacation? Because they worked very hard this winter.
And was that your experience as well, Chris?
Yeah. It wasn't just the weather, but like you said, it's the economic impact. We were seeing a lot more people in the street, mainly as a direct result of the governor's cuts to welfare. A lot of single adults who that $200 a month really was a lifeline that kept them housed. And so we saw a lot more people immediately fill Center City as panhandlers, because they lost that money, which means they lost whatever little room they had, or they lost a spot in a recovery house, because that's the money that supports that. And so we were trying to reach a lot more people in a much colder winter, not with less resources, but with more to do.
Gotcha.
And it was crazy and exhausting.
When we talk about the homeless, it's obviously a diverse population of people, and I don't want people to think that there's just a single profile of someone
Absolutely.
Who might be homeless. But, Marcella, I do want people to understand who it is we are talking about. Is there a way to describe, are we talking about largely men? Are we talking about families?
It depends where you look at it. I mean, we're talking about families. We're talking about a lot of families. It's just that, luckily, in Philadelphia, we've got a really extensive shelter system, and so you see them and they go into the shelter system. So Philly's Office of Supported Housing, every day, right now, has families sitting at 15th and Appletree, trying to find shelter, and they're trying to find spaces in their system. So a lot of families, significantly higher numbers there, and obviously a lot of children whom this really affects their stability, it affects their development, affects their education. Most people who don't work in this field think about, you know, as you do, the folks talked about, the folks on the street.
The ones you see every day.
Exactly, because yeah. The ones you see. What's important to know is that's really a small fraction of the population of people who experience homelessness. response. That's about 20%. That's one of the great things that outreach was able to do is if somebody's newly out there, they can say, no, here's where you go. Project Home knows to send people to which shelter at what time, et cetera, and how all of that system's organized. So the folks on the street are really a different population in many ways than the single adults and the families.
And is Project Home the kind of hub?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, they're the national leader. Sister Mary's been doing this since the 70s. I mean, we as a nation wouldn't be where we are around ending homelessness if it wasn't for Mary and the work of Project Home.
Let me turn to you, Chris, and talk a bit about Pathways to Housing PA. It's an unusual and almost counterintuitive program, but the idea, let me have you explain it rather than me.
So the model that we use is called Housing First, and it is a model that really is streets to homes. We meet someone on the street, and we work primarily with the other population, the population that we've talked about where people are on the streets for long periods of time. So they're chronically homeless, have a serious and persistent mental illness, probably also have an addiction, have major medical issues. A lot of people have some developmental disabilities, disability piled upon disability, piled upon disability. And these are folks that either have never connected with anything we've had to offer as a system or have flunked out of every other program the system has to offer them. We move them directly from the street into an apartment. They get to pick the neighborhood. They get to pick the apartment unit. And for a lot of these folks, it's not necessarily their mental illness that has kept them out of housing. It's the fact that they can't live with other people. And as a system, we've always required that people be able to live with other people before they can live in an apartment on their own.
So deal with some of their addiction problems or perhaps some of their mental illnesses.
Yes, there have been preconditions. You can come into this shelter or transitional housing unit if you get clean and sober, if you agree to see a doctor and take medication, which a lot of people aren't willing to do. But a lot of it is just the sleeping in the same room as someone else that they can't do because of whatever their illness is. So this model has no preconditions. You don't have to agree to be clean and sober to come in. You don't have to agree to see a doctor. All you have to do is agree to live by the same rules that we all do when we rent an apartment, you know, that we're going to obey the law and allow for our neighbors to enjoy their apartments without interrupting that. And you have to agree to let us see you a couple times a month in a home visit, period.
How many people are in this program and broadly speaking, how are they doing?
Well, we have about 400 people scattered around the city of Philadelphia. We rent units that are market rate apartment units throughout the city. So we don't have people grouped in any one area or any one building because we're all about integrating people in the community and rebuilding our communities. And we have an 89 to 90% retention rate with folks who were considered to be not housable prior to them coming into Pathways. So it is a model that has incredible outcomes.
And what do you see as its success?
People that many folks said will never come in.
Right.
People that said that person will never come in. People who said to me, this person is choosing to be homeless. They want to be out there. And I always challenge that because they don't want to be out there. They just have to be offered the deal that works for them. And this is the deal that works for them.
But as I said, it seems counterintuitive, the idea that someone who maybe is still dealing with some form of addiction, can they be a tenant in an apartment building?
They can be a tenant in an apartment building with very intensive services that see them very frequently and meet them where they are and work with what challenges they want to work with and also have the spirit and the community and the attitude that I know Chris and all of her staff do in order to engage them.
I would think, Chris, that one of the tricky parts is convincing that person who's either given up on the system or the system has given up on them to convince them that there is still something out there for them that might work.
There is relationship building that has to happen, and we spend time engaging people. And, you know, it's very simple things. There's not some complicated model that somebody came up with in order to engage people. It's about grace and dignity and kindness. And, you know, sometimes it's about offering someone a cup of tea and sitting down next to them and talking to them eye to eye and starting to build that relationship. And we've had great success in doing that. It's not – that part of the job isn't clinical. That part of the job is just treating people the way that you want to be treated. And we talk a lot about that at work. We talk about grace and we talk about dignity and we talk about kindness because that really is the core to what we do. Not just with the people we serve, but with our larger community. One of the things that's amazed me since I came to this model 5 years ago is the relationships that we have with our landlords. I mean, I hear from lots of other providers how they find it very difficult to rent apartments for their clients. We have landlords knocking down the door trying to get us to rent with them.
Really?
We have a landlord community. We have meetings. We have trainings. We respond to them. And they see it as a way, as their mitzvah. It's their way of being able to help with a problem that has frustrated all of us for so long. And we all, when we're frustrated by something, we all are looking for some way to be able to help with whatever that frustration is. And this offers them that. But coming from the traditional model of street to shelter, to I've been amazed at the reception that we've gotten and these relationships.
Well, as you're both talking, I'm thinking of former homeless people who have been on the show to talk about what it was like when they were homeless and the kind of loneliness and isolation. I mean, that was something that always stayed with me, Marcella, because we pass them every day. Exactly. We don't know what to say to them and what that effect is on that person.
Absolutely. That's why the hotline number is so important and getting outreach out there to talk to people and building that relationship because folks are, you know, I know folks are very, very isolated, particularly when you're experiencing all those symptoms of serious mental illness and you're caught in the delusions and the voices and all of those sorts of things, and you don't have hope. That's why it's really exciting, the programs that Chris does at my department, Philadelphia's Department of Behavioral Health. We have a lot of peer services. So I, every day, work with people who are formerly homeless, and when we're trying to make policy decisions, we can pull them in and say, how does this work? Does this make sense? So that's really, really important to us to try to build that community in whatever way possible.
And we're almost up in a break here, but does it work because it provides a kind of stability for this person and then that allows them to deal with some of their issues, some of their problems?
Absolutely. When I first started, I was actually a case manager in Housing First in the mid-90s in D.C., and I'd spent a decade, you know, getting a Ph.D. in psychology, and then I found all anybody wanted was housing. Okay, I was disappointed. That was mine. But, you know, so we learned about housing because that's what they wanted. And if you couldn't meet them where they were, if you tried to say, no, you have to do all these other things before you get to that point, some people did that. A lot of people came into that model and were helped in that model. But a lot of people weren't. And they're the folks you see on the streets. And they're the folks that, because Chris's team first offers housing, and then they can get beyond to look at addiction and those other issues.
Well, we're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. That's Marcella McGuire. She's Director of Homeless Services for Philadelphia's Department of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disability. Chris Simariglia, also with us, Executive Director of Pathways to Housing PA. We're taking a very short break. We've got another guest who will be joining us, and we want to hear from you. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
1812 Productions, Philadelphia's all-comedy theater company, supports WHYY. Now on stage, 1812's annual political comedy, This is the Week That Is. Written and performed by Philadelphia's own Jennifer Childs and This is the Week That Is Ensemble, this annual political satire features a script that changes with the headlines and up-to-the-minute reporting on the day's most important news, from Russian invasions to dog curbing in South Philadelphia. Tickets at 1812productions.org.
I'm Jeremy Hobson, and you've probably never heard this song before. No,
that song translates into When I Wake Up Tomorrow, but other than that, I don't know what he's saying, and I kind of like not knowing.
New sounds from Norway, next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
The National Constitution Center supports WHYY. The National Constitution Center is the Museum of We the People, featuring the acclaimed multimedia show Freedom Rising, Signers Hall, and the story of We the People through artifacts, a rare copy of the Constitution, and interactive exhibits. Now through October 19th, Slavery at Jefferson's Monticello, a powerful exhibition that follows six enslaved families who lived and worked at Jefferson's plantation. More at 215-409-6700 or constitutioncenter.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoena. I've been talking with Marcella McGuire and Chris Simariglia about homelessness here in Philadelphia. But homelessness is a challenge, an issue, a problem in smaller cities, in rural areas, even the suburbs. And joining us now is Sharon Parker. She's executive director of the Berks Coalition to End Homelessness. And Berks is north of Philadelphia. It includes the city of Reading. And Sharon Parker, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome, and I know you've been listening in. And how different would you say is homelessness in Berks County compared to what we've been talking about in Philadelphia?
Well, Berks County doesn't have the resources that you have in Philadelphia. Philadelphia has a nice array of different services, shelter services, the Housing First with Pathways to Housing. We don't have that kind of structure here. We are a smaller community, and we have to deal with a smaller set of circumstances. But we still have homeless here that have to come in from the cold in the winter times. So
it's a tough winter.
We have to rely a great deal on our faith-based community to step in and fill in where there's missing holes in the system.
And are we talking then about rural homeless people, or are we talking also about urban in Reading and maybe even suburban as well?
Absolutely. Berks County is a different kind of an animal, where we have the city of Reading, which is a large urban center. 88,000 people live in Reading. Reading is also 60% Hispanic, which, you know, makes it the highest Puerto Rican population in a city for Pennsylvania. And then outside the city of Reading, you have Berks County, which is a large county that has suburban areas and a lot of rural areas. We have a large area that is actually 40% of the land outside of Berks County is farmland. So we have both, we have the whole array of challenges here to address it as an urban problem and as a rural problem.
In fact, I was reading about Reading, and it's pretty shocking to think that about 40% of the population in Reading is poor, is in poverty.
Yes, we have 40%, a little more than 40% of the people live below the poverty line. So our approach here has to be more of, indeed, we do have homeless people, but it's almost as though it's the next rung of the ladder up that we have to deal with is more of a homeless prevention challenge, where we have people that are just families, really, that are just minutes away from homelessness, single mothers especially with children, working in lower jobs that, you know, if something happens to them, if they miss work or they have some kind of a challenge in their life, that they miss a paycheck, that they miss a rent payment, that they find themselves evicted. This is a constant cycle here in the city of Reading.
Well, Sharon, let me get Chris and Marcella back in on the conversation. Chris, I'm just curious about whether you, just even hearing what Sharon has to say, the differences between homelessness in a big city like Philadelphia. I've been to San Francisco. There's a huge homeless problem there as well, and other big cities. And then what we're hearing from Sharon, and the fact that Reading has a 40% poverty rate.
It's a lot more difficult. Sharon's job is a lot more difficult in a lot of ways than our jobs are, because there are a lot of programs and supports and dollars that the cities bring in from the federal government to help. So we have a lot more services available. We have a lot more people to serve, but we have a lot more services available. What Sharon is struggling with is a very real issue. It's poverty, which is the base of the problems that we are all dealing with on a daily basis. But it's poverty with less ability, less services, less resources to deal with it. The cities have people that can that are very good at writing grants and pulling in money from the state and from the feds. A lot of the counties don't have that. The talent exists, but there's no money to pay for it. And so they lose out on some of those bigger grant programs that we hear about. And they end up with less services. And so they have all of these people with the same needs and less shelter services, less housing services. The soup kitchens can't keep up. The food cupboards are empty. And we're seeing also a lot of that in Philly now because of the level of poverty.
Sharon, what I hear is a great then reliance on churches, I guess, and other religious institutions in Berks County to help deal with this problem.
Yes, Berks County is a very generous county. The area is certainly outside the city. There is some wealth there, and we rely very heavily on the private donations. But you're right, we're lucky in that we have a very good working relationship with all the churches, with the Jewish Federation, we have an Islamic center here, and all of these faith-based initiatives kind of pitch in where the holes in the system fall. Now, obviously, we can't do everything, but I have to say honestly that if it weren't for some of these faith-based initiatives, we would be a lot worse off than we already are. So one of our largest providers of homeless services is a faith-based organization, and they work very closely with us, and they sit on my board. So, yeah, we really do need that piece here. Exactly what you were just talking about earlier about the funding problems. I intrigued about a Housing First initiative to be able to work here, but we don't have the funding to pay. If you take one of our chronic homeless people off the street and put them into an apartment, we don't really have the funding to pay that person's rent ongoing, because the landlord system is basically private, and then we don't really have a lot of the funding to wrap all these intensive services around the person. So we just, some of these programs that the federal government and some of the larger cities have spoken about and encouraged us to start is very difficult to do in this environment.
Let me get you back in on the conversation, Marcella. And Sharon talked a bit about prevention, and especially with a city with a high poverty rate. Philadelphia is a relatively high poverty rate as well. The idea of keeping people from, you know, especially if they're one paycheck away from losing their apartment, for instance.
So Philadelphia does have some homeless prevention services. It was very well funded coming out of the 2008, I'm trying to remember what it's called, the funding from the federal government around ending the recession, et cetera. We did a lot of it in 8 and 9 and 10. We do a little bit of it now. Again, it's just not that the funding just isn't there for the agencies, et cetera. But we do a really good job at the front door, and we're actually looking to do a better job. One of the new buzzwords is called coordinated assessment, meaning it's important to remember that the homeless folks who experience homelessness have all different reasons why they do. There's that person that Sharon talked about that's one paycheck away, that's working, that I miss a couple of shifts because I'm taking care of a sick child or a sick parent. What they need is very different from the person who's been living on the streets for years with serious mental illness. And so we're trying to make sure that we give the right resource to the right person at the right time.
And is the goal then to get someone into a housing or apartment facility?
Absolutely.
Get them working, get their health
absolutely
care
the
taken
goal
care?
Is to get them to where they need to be back integrated in the community. For a person who just needs a little bit of help between that, you know, losing that job, losing a couple of shifts, that's one intervention. For somebody like someone's Chris's teams would deal with, that's a different intervention. But the goal is always to get them to be part of the community again, as we all are every day.
Well, let me quickly reintroduce the three of you, and I do want to give out that phone number again. Talking with Marcella McGuire. Again, she's Director of Homeless Services for Philadelphia's Department of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disability. Also with us is Chris Simariglia, Executive Director of Pathways to Housing PA. And on the telephone, Sharon Parker, Executive Director of the Berks Coalition to End Homelessness. We want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. How do you think we can end homelessness? Chris, I want to go back to you, and I want to hear from all of you, but we haven't talked about veterans. But I know, I don't know what the exact numbers are, but we know that veterans make up a sizable portion of the homeless population. It's been pretty consistent, I think, through most of my lifetime.
Yes.
Why is that? Veterans.
Well, we keep having wars, so we keep, you know, we keep making new veterans, and we have never quite served people properly when they have come back or when they have gotten out of the military. So we have been working with two cohorts of veterans primarily. At Pathways, we have two contracts with the VA for veterans housing services. The first contract a couple of years ago, we dealt with a lot of chronically homeless vets, many Vietnam and post-Vietnam war vets that we now have in housing, many that you would recognize as someone who walks the streets of Center City, Philadelphia, who were out there for a very long time. This second contract that we've just initiated, the majority of folks that we're seeing now are coming out of Iraq and Afghanistan, very different population.
Yeah. Certainly much younger, sort of the next generation, really.
Much younger and different in that they're coming out with less skills because they went in with less skills, and they're coming out feeling that there were a lot of broken promises, and they have a lot of issues.
Right.
We all have a lot of issues, but they have a lot of issues. What's interesting is with the Veterans Administration, in order to qualify for all of this veterans money that we keep hearing about, you know, we're going to end veterans homelessness and the federal government's dumping all of this money into helping with that, you have to be eligible for that money. So there are a lot of vets on the streets that we serve on a daily basis who don't qualify for any of those services or that money because there's something called less than honorably discharged. And there's a very convoluted yes,
there you
formula
go.
To decide who actually is eligible and who isn't eligible. But it's been an interesting challenge to meet the need. So the vets we're dealing with are a specific population. They're vets that have been on the streets for a while, have a serious and persistent mental illness, probably also have an addiction, have PTSD, have trauma related to their service in the military, all of those things related to them. And the Veterans Administration has started to contract out those services, and they are now looking at the Housing First model and Pathways kind of as the model for that model around the country, as the way to reach these veterans that don't walk into a veterans medical center or don't reach out for services.
Chris brings up...
Go ahead, Marcella, and then Sharon, I want to get you back into the conversation.
Chris brings up a really good issue, and Philadelphia is really excitingly poised. We're part of something called the 25 Cities Initiative that the federal government, Department of Housing and Urban Development's initiated, because it's right. Some folks are eligible for veterans-related services, some folks are not, and so we're doing a really exciting collaboration between the Veterans Administration and HUD and my department, which funds and manages all the Medicaid behavioral health services, so that we can determine, okay, this is veteran A. He has an honorable discharge. He's entitled to a VASH voucher. He's going to go to Chris. Here's veteran B. He served in the military as well, but for whatever reason, he has a different kind of discharge, and the public sector system should be working with him and assisting him and helping getting off. So that collaboration, that sharing of information and trying to be strategic about using what are far too limited resources is really, really, I think, making Philadelphia poised to be the first city to end veterans homelessness.
Oh, that's interesting. Sharon, how about up in Redding and Berks County? Is there a problem of homeless vets there as well?
Well, we do have the same problem here, but again, with a smaller city, a lot less resources. We do not have a VA that is really close to us. We have to work with the Lebanon VA or the Coatesville VA, both of which aren't in our county. So the SSVF program, the Supportive Services for Veterans Family program that the VA initiated, has been very successful, and we do have it here in our county that has helped to move the qualifying vets, and I'll say that because it was mentioned earlier,
right,
not all the vets qualify, but the qualifying vets back into housing and wrap services around them, which has been very successful. But as they mentioned, there are those that do not qualify, so we have to approach them from a different standpoint. But just to piggyback onto that conversation is, in the case of the homeless issue, there's different subgroups underneath all of that that need some kind of attention. And when you have a city the size of Philadelphia, there's always services that can attend to each of those subgroups, such as families or youth, homeless, and the veterans. And so there's a better approach to each individual center, whereas in a city like Reading, where we are sort of a microcosm of the same problem, we don't have all those services available. So we are still trying to create here a family shelter, which we don't have.
Wow.
And so we have to find other creative ways to be able to work with the families that do fall into homelessness.
Where does the family go in Berks County?
Well, what we'd have to do is we can use funding to put them temporarily into housing, such as a hotel or a motel, until we can get them services back into housing. In most cases, the housing first model of getting a family that was formerly stable that has fallen into homelessness back into an apartment works very well. They don't need a lot of services. They usually, it's just sort of an episodic homeless issue where something happened and they're homeless and they'll be okay going forward. A totally different picture than, you know, what Chris was describing before, right, about the chronic homeless that needs everything.
Well, I have to say, Sharon, when you talked about the fact that you didn't have shelters for families, both Marcella and Chris just went, "Whoa!"
Yes,
are you shocked by that, Marcella?
I'm shocked by that. In a city with a 40% poverty rate, I mean, what do you do? Do you see? I mean, God forbid, do you see children on the street? What when that happens?
Well, these are the challenges that we deal with. You know, especially in terms of the funding from HUD, where HUD has kind of backed away from additional monies for shelters. They say they're a housing organization, and you know, as far as they fund the shelters, as far as they want to fund shelters. But we have a very limited sheltering where we can put women and children only. There's only 4 rooms available for those people, but for an intact family, a mother and a father and children, there is no formal family shelter. And we're working on that right now. We've been trying to bring all the stakeholders together to try to make something like that possible here in Berks County. But as I say, a lot of the perception now about family shelter is, you know, if the housing first model kind of moves in to take over this idea, we still feel that we need a place for these families to go that we can sort of stabilize them and then move them back into where they need to be.
You know what? If you don't mind, only because I'm looking at the clock, Sharon, can you stay with us? We have to take a very short break. And I know Marcella wanted to say something and Chris as well. And we are talking about homelessness, frankly, getting an update on homelessness in Pennsylvania. We're focusing on Philadelphia for all the obvious reasons, but we also wanted to get a sense of what's happening in Berks County, where Reading has a poverty rate of about 40%. Talking with Sharon Parker, Chris Simariglia, and Marcella McGuire. We do want to hear from you. In fact, we've got some people I do want to get in on the conversation as well. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. What to do about homelessness? Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Mendelsohn Club of Philadelphia, presenting Anthracite Fields and Mendelsohn Club Chorus, conducted by Alan Harler. It's an opportunity to explore Pennsylvania coal mining lore through this immersive concert. Saturday and Sunday, April 26th and 27th at 4 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. at the Philadelphia Episcopal Cathedral, featuring the Bang on a Can All-Stars and composer Julia Wolfe. Tickets available online at mcchorus.org, mcchorus.org.
Washington goes wireless?
While I'm out in the district, I can bring up my phone and vote that way. And so I think it's just a way to bring Congress into the 21st century.
So via the internet, we can Skype, we can talk remotely to relatives, conduct job interviews, and even hear from Edward Snowden. So why not politics? Next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
The National Museum of American Jewish History at 5th and Market supports WHYY and presents Remembering Tragedy, Commemoration, and Memorialization in America on Sunday, April 27th at 4 p.m. CEO Ivy Barsky leads a discussion between Alice Greenwald, the 9/11 Memorial Museum Director, and James Young, the Director of the Institute for Holocaust, Genocide, and Memory Studies at UMass Amherst, in partnership with Penn's Jewish Studies Program. Details at nmajh.org or 215-923-3811.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowain. We are talking about homelessness, and it's often a difficult subject to discuss because of the difficult lives involved here. And again, our guests are Chris Simariglia, and she's Executive Director of Pathways to Housing PA. Marcella McGuire is Director of Homeless Services for Philadelphia's Department of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disability. And on the telephone, Sharon Parker, Executive Director of the Brooks Coalition to End Homelessness. And Berks County is north of Philadelphia. It's a mix of small cities like Reading, also rural and suburban population. Let me get some callers in. And we have a comment from Miguel. Can they talk a bit about combating homelessness in the Latino community? And I know that's an issue for you, Sharon, but I'm sure that's an issue here in Philadelphia. Marcella, if I can put that to you first, obviously language is an issue as well.
Absolutely. We now, as of this year or last year, have two outreach workers who speak fluent Spanish, and that's really helpful as well. I will say that in those coldest spots of this winter, the only group who didn't come in was a group of, we believe, probably undocumented folks in different areas across the country. Across the city. They're obviously very afraid of that, and we just checked on them through the winter as well. So that's obviously an issue. I would say on the street, it's maybe about 5 to 10% of the folks that we see on the street.
Chris, do you want to add anything to that?
It's interesting. When we look at, you know, the grander statistics and we look at race and ethnicity breakdown and who's on the streets, we do see less Latinos and less Asian folks on the streets. And I think part of that is still the family structure and the closeness of the families, and there is still much more of a feeling of responsibility within Latino families for taking care of relatives that are indigent, for taking care of relatives that are ill, for taking care of relatives that have a mental illness or an addiction. And so there's more of a tolerance level and a sharing of the needs of that person throughout the family. So the homelessness really happens, I think, sometimes later than it would in our other populations.
How about for you, Sharon, from your perspective up there in Berks County?
I believe it was Chris just talking now about the Latino families, and we find the same thing here. I mean, certainly we can't even have an organization that reaches out to the homeless without having bilingual people working there now. It's just because of the structure here and the fact that we are 60% Hispanic in the city of Reading, and so it's not even a question anymore. It's a definite requirement. But I believe that you're right in that what happens here is trying to find the homeless sometimes is a difficult task because the Latino family does kind of take care of its own that way. And so what we have here is a lot of doubled up families, a lot of people that if something happens to one, then they move into the apartment of another one, and it's probably not the best idea. Right. So they're in a one-bedroom apartment with seven people, and they're trying to do the best they can. So I think we do have a lot of that here in Reading, which makes finding and reaching out to the homeless a very difficult task for our outreach workers.
Let me get Patrick from Trenton, New Jersey, to join us. Patrick, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I want to applaud all your guests for the work that they do because I'm a homeless vet myself, honorably discharged, working with the SSDF up in Bucks County, and I've encountered so many people that have put their hand out and been helpful. I just want to say two things. One, I've got my act together. You know, I'm not pensy issues or anything like that, but mental illness or any kind of mental services is difficult to come by. There's a long waiting list even for Catholic Charities, like 2 months in some cases. And Dan Gottlieb is great, but you know, you can't just go by the radio all the time.
Sure, no, I appreciate that.
So that's a critical thing. But you really, there's two things. One, I was wondering if there's a program for transportation or vehicles. I hear about this for vets. I have not been able to research this anywhere online where there's something available for vets, because having a job without a car in Pennsylvania is almost impossible. And two, a roadmap for somebody to get in services, because it's a very long process, and it's, unless you're right in the shelter and people are helpful, but even in the shelters, people don't know where to direct you, and especially outside of their particular county, they really don't have knowledge of it. And the SSVF is a new program, but you've got to have tremendous patience and flexibility to be able to get through these programs, because it takes months and months if you're really trying to get your act together. But I do applaud everything you're doing, and again, is there a vehicle program?
Sure, no, we hear you, Patrick.
The roadmap is a helpful thing.
And I applaud you for calling into the show and raising some really important questions. Marcella, let me begin with you.
I'm not aware of a vehicle-related program. What I would do one of two things if I were you, Patrick. One is I would reach out to whoever your local congressperson is. Those offices are very, very oriented to helping vets like yourself, and they know a lot of what the services are. And often if they make a call, you're first on the list to get whatever the services you're looking for. The second thing, and again, this is something Philly is blessed with, but they've certainly worked beyond Philly, the multi-service center run by Tim Meserve down at 4th and Florist in Philly isn't just focused on Philly vets, because that's not the sort of boundaries. They're looking at, they help folks from South Philly and other in Camden and other areas as well as beyond. So talking to the experts down there, that's who I would go to ask those good questions.
But Chris, what Patrick is describing is a complicated system with many moving parts, and it's hard to navigate through that.
It is, and nobody can navigate through that on their own. So the first thing that someone has to do is hook up with a Patrick, or go into the Veterans Multi-Service Center where there are workers who will help you start the connection process, or if you're able, go to the VA Medical Center, whichever medical center serves your area, and start an application process. But you have to show up and get somebody in the social work department at one of the medical centers to start the process for you. It's not easy. No.
I was in a meeting once with someone who had an MD and a PhD, and who very clearly said, I don't understand this process.
Yeah.
So I was.
Well, Patrick, I appreciate the call. Let me get actually Michael from Pottsville to join us on Radio Times. Michael, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just was really intrigued to hear that Reading was part of the conversation, because I'm from Schuylkill County up in Pottsville, which is about 30 miles north of Reading. And basically, this winter, we started the county's real first homeless shelter. Now, when I say real first, we are currently in the basement of a local church where we have maybe anywhere from 15 to 25 residents at a time, mostly single males, with all types of issues and problems. And we got a lot of support so far from the folks in Reading. So kind of a shout-out to the folks in Reading at Opportunity House, Shelley, and whoever else is there that have helped us out. But our homelessness looks so much different than Philly. We initially started the process by looking at what, you know, larger cities experience. And, boy, what a difference.
We just
don't have people sleeping on steam grates because we're just a small community. But what most of what we found was people stacking, couch surfing, and some during a point-in-time count this winter, we actually found some folks living out in the woods. And actually, a real quick story, we did find one woman who was in the woods. We found her. She had frostbitten fingers. The story got out on the news and ended up, she ended up reconnecting with a daughter of hers who actually is from Philadelphia. So that was kind of a reunion.
That's
that
amazing.
Was very unexpected, yeah.
Well, Mike, I really appreciate the call giving us, again, another sort of more suburban, different county perspective from Philadelphia. But let me give Sharon Parker from Berks County to respond to your comments. Sharon, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm surprised, Michael,
It is Michael.
Okay, I was in Pottsville yesterday consulting with the LHOT team about their point-in-time count and perhaps starting a street outreach effort up there in Schuylkill County. And I was going to mention that when there was some shock about the fact that we didn't have a family shelter here. I was going to mention that Schuylkill County just opened their first homeless shelter 2 months ago.
Yeah.
So they, up until then, they've had the challenge of really having their only fallback was to use a motel for the homeless people that did come into the system of services to put them there until they could get them into some kind of housing. But your earlier caller also brought up something interesting that I wanted to mention, which is a big problem for the homeless system, which is navigating the services. In most cases, especially in a community like this where we don't have as many services, it is incumbent on the person themselves to be able to be their own advocate. And this is a very difficult thing that we ask of people. And so this is why we find some people do slip through the cracks, because we may make an appointment for them with a doctor, or, you know, we may give them applications to fill out and return. And it's confusing to them and complicated. And so they give up, and then we lose them. And we just don't have, you know, exactly what Patrick was talking about with the veterans. It's how we don't have somebody to hand walk you through every step of the way. And this is definitely an issue that we face here.
Yeah, Michael, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Chris, it looks like you want to say something.
Well, it's interesting. So I'm listening to some of the differences between, you know, the city and using Housing First in the city and in more rural areas. And I just wanted to let people know that we have actually looked at that. And Pathways has done a rural demonstration project in Vermont. We wanted to see how this model worked in an area that didn't get a lot of federal dollars, that couldn't figure out how to pay for it. And so we got a grant through the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration to do a demonstration that's now looking like it's going to continue in a very similar situation to what we're seeing in Berks County and Schuylkill County. So if people are interested in learning more about how you can do this model on a smaller scale in a rural area and make it work, because the dollars work. It's cheaper to do Housing First than to put someone in a motel. It's cheaper to do Housing First than it is to put someone in a shelter. And we've got cost comparison data. You can go to pathwaystohousing.org, which is our national website, and there's a lot of the research data on there, and there's information about the Vermont program.
Let me get Joan from Phoenixville to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Joan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Good for you.
I wanted to give a point of view. I was taking care of a drug-addicted sister, and I'm actually the person who had to make her homeless a couple times because of some of the things that would happen in my house. I worked that night. I'm a nursing assistant, and she almost burnt my house down one time. Wow. And for the safety of my neighbors that time, I had to, you know, have her leave my house. And it was very disconcerting. I would go up and down the Schuylkill River looking for her because it was in the warmer weather, and she would always come back to my house in the wintertime. But I did go to Al-Anon, but there were no real resources for family members like me that were, you know, trying to keep the person safe and also keep me, my family, and my neighbors safe. And I would just like to hear a little bit about that from your guests.
Absolutely. Joan, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Marcella, can I toss that to you?
Sure. I can't speak for, I think, Phoenixville is in Montgomery County. I know in Philadelphia we have something called the Family Resource Network. You want to reach a lady named Kathleen Cantwell at 215 215- 546-0300. And so we have some services that are basically family members to family members who've been through this themselves and who walk through other family members. The other group I'd reach out to is PROACT. I don't have that phone number off the top of
PROACT.
My head. PROACT. PROACT. And they're a recovery organization. They're for folks who are in recovery themselves. They also support family members to find groups and try to get those folks together, one, to support each other. I can't imagine how heart-wrenching that decision is and how difficult that decision is to make, and also to have other people who've walked those paths that you're trying to walk now and have them walk with you. For the veterans, Philly's services just got some new what we call peer navigators. They're people who, you know, for the veteran services, I've been a veteran. I've been homeless myself. I'm going to try to help other people now walk you through that. It just makes all of the difference to talk to somebody who's been in those shoes, whether it's as a family member, a person in recovery, a formerly homeless veteran, and have them walk by your side and explain all that.
And we're almost out of time here, but there are certain themes that I hear. We're talking about problems of mental illnesses. We're talking about drugs. We're talking about alcohol. And I'm looking at you, Chris. I mean, if we want to understand the problem of homelessness, it seems we have to look at the issues of mental health. That seems to be sort of at the core of what we're talking about.
It is and it isn't. If we want to understand homelessness, we have to understand poverty. And we have to understand how all of the decisions that we're making affect poverty and why that's causing Reading to have a 40% of their population below the poverty line, and why that's causing Philadelphia to quickly become one of the poorest cities in the nation. That's number one. When we're talking about chronically homeless people that are out there long term, not families that are between paychecks and can't make the rent this month, but the longer term issue, then we're looking more at issues related to mental illness, and we're looking at issues related to developmental disabilities. We're looking at issues related to long-term addiction. But the underlying issue for all of those people also,
the majority
of the time, is poverty.
Well, as I said, we could go on, but the clock is telling me we're out of time. My thanks to all three of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Krista Mariglia, thank you very much. She's Executive Director of Pathways to Housing PA. Marcella McGuire, thank you very much as well. And she's Director of Homeless Services for Philadelphia's Department of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disability. And Sharon Parker, thank you very much as well, Executive Director of the Brooks Coalition to End Homelessness. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program, including Facebook and Twitter, email, archives, podcasts, satellite radio. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, and do stay with us for the second hour. We'll be right back.